Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The stupid. That is 45% of the undecideds, John. They are the swingest of the swing voters. And they, as they always do, will decide this election.
And it's a fascinating thing. Now, how do you break down the stupids?
Well, ironically, it's a rather complex demographic. You've got your paste eaters, your numbskulls, your nitwits, your f**tards. People whose head gets stuck in jars when they eat pickles. That's a surprisingly large component. People who lose arguments to babies. Douche nozzles, tiger petters.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not familiar with all the lingo. Tiger petters.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's people who go into zoos and they pet tigers. Let's push on. People who jump up and down on frozen lakes to check if the ice is strong enough to hold them. Shaved gorillas who've somehow acquired driver's licenses. The voluntarily lobotomized. And finally, Cubs fans.
Cubs fans. Now, they're... Cubs fans are considered a subset of the stupid.
Oh, absolutely, John. I mean, they've had 100 years to figure out that what they want will never happen, yet they still yearn for it.
And that is stupid.
Yes, it's very
stupid. Because the Cubs will never win.
No, that's right, John. The Chicago Cubs will never, ever win the World Series.
No, they won't.
They won't do it.
They've made God angry.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
From the little brick building on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punchki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM and FM, Chicago.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. He's a man with two green thumbs, which unfortunately puts him on the no-fly list. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Special Election Day version of One More Time coming up. Get ready now.
One more time.
One more time. Hey ho! Good morning and welcome to my first day of frost. Today was the first day I saw real frost on the ground.
It was my first day too. Oop.
Yay!
My first day and Chicago's first day, right?
Well, I think some people in the outlying parts of Chicago had frost before. This was the first day I saw it in my yard. And it didn't seem to cover the whole yard either. Of course, I slept an extra hour because... Oh, wait a second. I already blew it. I was supposed to go, hey, welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. For those of you who missed the first hour, you slept. You overslept. But it's the other way. See, it doesn't even work in the fall because you get the extra hour, and everybody knows you get the extra hour.
Yeah, you got to do it in the spring. So put
it's
it on
fall
your calendar.
Back. Spring forward, fall back. This is like the best day. If you work on a Sunday like I do, this is one of the best days of the year. The extra hour of sleep. I had to play at the beginning of the show... my voter, because it's not every year, my very special voter clip from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and John Oliver. I just love that piece about the Chicago Cubs. Because, hey, you Cubs fans, guess what? You're just like the rest of the teams in the world now, because you dumped a manager who did nothing wrong, except he was, you know, not the one they really wanted. So bye-bye, we'll pay you. We'll pay you off for those couple of years. We'll pick up a new guy. And it just shows you that, you know, you want to pretend that the team's special and the Ivy and stuff. Well, they're ripping all, they're not ripping out the Ivy, but they're redoing the stadium. They're going to put the Jumbotron. You guys manipulate managers and money just the same way that everybody does. There's nothing special about the Cubs anymore, except 107 years since the last World Championship. So that's what I hope keeps going. That's what I'm always rooting for. It's like, keep the streak alive. Keep the streak alive. Voting. Coming. Have you voted yet, Carol?
No, I did not. I did get it in the mail, but I just decided I'll just go.
Okay.
It's right. You get really close.
We get mail ballots? See, I'm not even aware of that.
Yeah, you can. What do you mean?
I went and voted early. All right. I know that you can go to the libraries and vote early, and I did that. I voted last week, but I wasn't aware, and I should be. But it doesn't matter because I'm going to go vote early anyway, and I'm probably not going to use the mail.
So where did you vote? Well, did you vote? You went somewhere to vote
early? I went to a library on North Avenue.
Yeah, I got something in the mail saying that I could vote through the mail.
I believe it. Yeah. I mean,
I was delirious that day.
It's possible you were.
It's very possible.
Well, just regardless, folks, go out and vote. If you haven't yet, you've missed the early voting. But please, please go out and vote. I don't know what else to say to you. If you don't vote, I don't want to know you. I don't want to talk to you. I'm not interested in your kids or anything or your dog. Or the most wonderful thing you did at work, if you don't vote, I don't care about you. You have forfeited the most important part of our democracy, and you are the problem. You know, I talked to this, I have to say kid, because he was young. I went to a rally earlier this year, and it was a rally against a refinery in Whiting, you know, the one that they're going to put all the pet coke through. And I got into a conversation with a young man who's probably early 20s, and I asked him if he voted. He says, no, I don't vote. I said, what do you mean you don't vote? He says, and, you know, doesn't matter. It doesn't. Then my vote doesn't count for anything. You know what he told me? He said, if I go to an Occupy rally, I know that my voice will be heard. That was his response. That if he goes to an Occupy rally, his voice will be heard. Because he can say something. He can say, it's time for us to stand up, or time for us to sit down. It's time for us to get a cup of coffee. And he'll be heard. That's all that will happen. You know, laws won't change necessarily on that spot.
Oh, hang on. You got a call. But did you set him straight?
I tried to. I don't know that I got through. I don't know that I got through. I just couldn't believe it. What I said to him, I said, wait. Here's the deal. Why don't you do both? Why don't you go to the Occupy rally and cast your vote? And see what happens. You know, then you can say you did both. And do the voting thing just in case. Just in case it might actually make a difference. See, if enough people did, and that's what Norman Goldman talks about all the time on his show, is that if enough people did it, it does make a difference. If you look at it as my vote, my single vote, well, of course it doesn't make a difference. One vote generally does not win in election. But 20 votes can, 50 votes can, 100 votes can. 200, you know, elections have been that close. Generally, it's not one vote. I'm trying to imagine what would happen if somebody won by one vote and how many recounts there would be until there was a final decision made on it. That would be just amazing. All right, on today's show, a few things. I've got this very interesting rant that a friend of mine sent to me by somebody who runs a farm that sells CSA shares, community-supported agriculture, and it's about this chemical that the EPA approved called Enlist Duo. It's a new weed killer that basically combines 2,4-D and glyphosate. Glyphosate is Roundup, and 2,4-D is used in a lot of lawn care products. This guy wrote a very interesting thing that I want to get to. But in the second hour, I am very, very excited because I've got one of the foremost bee experts, B-E-E, as in B-E-E-double-E, Dr. Marla Spivak, who's a distinguished McKnight University professor of apiculture. Not about apes, but about bees and social insects at the University of Minnesota. There's an organic farm called Cascadian Farm. They've got this campaign called Bee Friendlier, and Dr. Spivak will be talking about that. And of course, always in the first hour, Rick DeMaio weather at 9:45. I might get a little bit into the battery question again that we started to talk about last week. There's people calling about voting. Okay, so let's do that real quick before we get into the green room. And then at the end of the show, I want to remind you that Diane Gassman from LaSalle County, Illinois, sent me a photo. Actually, she didn't send me a photo. I saw some photos, and she wrote to me and said, we need to chat a little bit. If you were out in this weather the other day, remember Halloween? 50-mile-an-hour winds? Imagine if you're next to a silica sand pile, like the folks in LaSalle County are. Want to know what happens when 50-mile-an-hour winds whip up those sand piles? We'll talk to Diane Gassman about that. But first, I see you got a couple of phone calls, so let's go to Judith on line one. Judith, good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning. I love your program. I'm so grateful that you are there for us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. You wanted to talk something about voters?
Yes, early voting continues, at least in the suburban areas, until 4 o'clock today. Now, I can't speak for Chicago because my computer's not here, but I do know that suburban voters can vote until between 9 a.m. and 4 o'clock today at those same specific voting sites. For example, in Arlington Heights, we go to the Arlington Heights Village Hall. Anyone in Rolling Meadows, Palatine, Buffalo Grove, Mount Prospect can go there. So each suburban area will have a specific voting site, just like you went to your library.
Mm-hmm.
And then on election day, at least in suburban Cook County, and I think this probably applies in Chicago too, but they have their own election authority. In suburban Cook County, you can register and vote on election day.
Yeah, that I like that register in election on the same day is great. That's just a great idea. And I think and I thank you for correcting me. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is some voting going on today. In fact, I saw it, I believe, just yesterday. And I'm trying to remember where. I'm going to have Carol and I are going to track this down. I'm pretty sure there is voting. And I think there's in four locations in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
You're probably right.
That
Cook County Clerk's website is a good one for suburban voters. Now, I think on Monday, if they're registering voting at the same time, they will need identification. And today, too. But if you're already registered on election day, you do not need identification.
Say that again. I'm sorry, I was a little distracted here.
If you are already registered, you do not need identification in order to vote. But if you have not registered, you do need identification.
Well, that would make sense. Yeah, you know, and that's the thing I've always wondered about the ID thing with the voter ID thing, and the idea of keeping people from voting.
That's what it is.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's it's as many people have said. I'm not the first. It's a solution in search of a problem.
Right. And now the great thing in Illinois here, we had Now, how can I think of this? We had voting, we allowed registration online for those people who had already gotten an Illinois identification card, like a driver's license, because their signature is already on file with the Secretary of State's office. They could register online, and they were using that signature. And then on Election Day, when they sign in, their signature on Tuesday or today will be compared to that signature that they've already have on file at the Secretary of State's office.
And I went to the Cook County Clerk's site. If you go to cookcountyclerk.com/elections and then click on early voting, they've got some information. So, for instance, in Arlington Heights, there's voting today from 9 to 3 p.m. I'm sorry. Yeah, 9 to 4 p.m. At the Arlington Heights Village Hall. Calumet has early voting today, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Cicero, 9 to 4. Des Plaines, there's a bunch. So you can still get out there and vote today till 4 p.m. in a lot of locations. This is the suburban list, obviously. Now I'm going to track down the Chicago list when I get a chance here, and maybe Carol can help me with it. Hey, Judith, great information. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and I'm with you. League of Women Voters and everybody encourages citizens to vote.
Are you with the League of Women Voters?
I am.
Great organization.
Take care, Mike. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a great Sunday. Let's go to Shelley. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning. And I totally support you and everybody who encourages people to register and vote. And I have kind of a crass reason that might be persuasive to some people. One thing is that, and if you think about it, if you're an elected official and you're allocating budgets, you're deciding, okay, which alleys do we repair? Which streets do we repave? Where do we send more garbage collection, whatever? To tell you the truth, I think even, you know, most people are going to look, maybe it's not the only factor, but they're going to look at, well, how many people are registered to vote there? What kind of an impact will my doing these things have on the possibility of votes? They're going to look at how many people are registered. And then they're going to even look at how many people voted. They may not know who voted for who, but if there's a precinct or a neighborhood in a suburb where few people are registered or few people turned out to vote, I just kind of feel it's human nature. They're not as likely to get some of the good stuff. So maybe that would persuade some people.
But it boggles my mind, Shelley, that you have to come up with reasons to encourage people to vote. It's like,
indeed.
You know, here we are. We just, if you're like me, I voted the very first time I could when I turned 18 when I was in Michigan. And so I have been voting for a long, long time. And I would never not vote. And I don't need all these reasons to do it. I just know it's important. And the fact that you have to jump through hoops of fire to explain to people why this might be important, why you might actually want to participate in your own democracy is just, it's so frustrating, isn't it?
You know, it's heartbreaking, and I have, to say there are people in my circle who are like the young man that you spoke to, and it's heartbreaking, and especially if anybody remembers when people in South Africa were first, the majority black people were first allowed to vote, the photos on television of people, it literally looked like a half a mile of people lining up, no chairs, no bottled water, nothing, and they voted, and I got a lot of photocopies or copies from the newspaper of those photos, and I try to remember sometimes to carry those around if I'm going to be talking about voting, because that's, you know, that's so compelling that this is how important it is to vote. So I totally agree with you. But sometimes it just gets people to think a little differently in their own self-interests. If I go through that, you might your neighborhood might get some benefits. It's kind of, like I say, it's very crass, but it's just another thought anyway out there.
No, it's anything you, you know, any argument you can come up with to get people to do it works for me, Shelley.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for carrying that torch.
I appreciate, it's my duty. It's my civic duty, and you too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The number here and the phones are lighting up. We'll get to some more of them. 773-763-9278. I didn't expect the conversation to go in this direction, but sometimes it does. It's the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM. In just a second, wait a second. Let's go to line three. Before I break, is this the Sarah Batka?
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I just wanted to tell your listeners that a lot of people may not vote because they don't know who to vote for. So, the default choice is no choice at all. Sierra Club has a list of endorsed candidates that you can print and bring to the polls with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on their website, IllinoisSierraClub.org.
That's great.
Print up a list of candidates to bring to the polls.
And if you're listening to this show, there's a good chance that you're interested in candidates who care something about the environment and about our air and about our water. And that's a good place to start.
Yep. So I just wanted to share that.
Well, Sarah, I appreciate it. I wish you were in studio here talking to me. But
I know. I miss you guys.
Come back soon.
Okay.
We miss you, too.
Thanks, Carol.
All right. Happy voting day, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. Okay, one more. Always dangerous to go to Amtrak, Tim. But,
it's not that dangerous, Mike. It's not that dangerous. Well, as a matter of fact, I'm a technical judge of election, and I just picked up my voter supplies. And I've got some work I have to do in the office today.
Cool.
I'll be setting up my polling place on Monday evening, and then I'll be there all day Tuesday. For anybody who got an absentee ballot and they did not get a chance to mail it in,
yeah,
what's going to happen? It's really important. Don't just show up to the polls without that paperwork. Because what's going to happen is we get green stickers for everybody who got an absentee ballot, everybody who early voted.
Okay.
And we put those in the voter registration books. And it lets us know that you've already voted. So this double vote crap is just, it's for the birds. It's not real. Anyway, but what we can do at an Illinois polling place is we can accept those. If, say, fill out your absentee ballot, put in the envelope, bring it to the polling place, hand it to the tech judge or the ballot judge, and they'll make sure it gets counted. That's all there is to it.
That's fabulous. So thank you so much for pointing that. Now, where are you? Where are you going to be located?
My polling place is Addison Township out in DuPage County.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you just want to stop by and see Amtrak Tim, that's where I'll be. My civic duty.
There you go, folks. If you want to see Amtrak Tim, he's hanging out there. And
everybody vote. It's important. If you just protest and don't vote, you're silly.
Yeah, you are. Vote. You're an idiot, and I'll call you an idiot to your face. If you don't vote and you're protesting, a lot of people do it because they say politics is dirty. Yeah. You know what? There's a lot of things in life that are dirty and that are hard. They say that, a plague on both their houses because of the negative ads. Well, if you voted and had a say in things, perhaps money would be taken out of politics and we wouldn't have as much of this. I mean, on and on and on. Well, Amtrak Tim, good on you for being out there and volunteering and being part of the system and a part of the solution instead of the problem.
Have a good day, Mike.
All right, take care.
It wasn't so bad.
No, it wasn't. I feel okay. I'm going to hang up now, though, before something bad happens. Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, there we go. We need to take care of this. We'll be right back on the Mike Novak Show.
Captain's log, Stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks.
of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ningladore.
Captain, shields are failing. Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
Well, we're in the green room, but I do want to tell folks that I did find this information about voting early in Chicago. And there are, as I said, four locations in Chicago today. And nope, looks like five. Okay. Election Board, 69 West Washington, King Center, 4314 South Cottage Grove, Mount Greenwood Park, 3721 West 111th, Westside Learning Center, 4624 West Madison, and Wells Park at 2333 West Sunnyside on the north side of town. So those are places you can find that, and you can go to www.chicagoelections.com/en/calendar to find this. So we've tracked down all this. We've had some wonderful calls. I want to thank all those people who called in to tell us about what they're doing with the voting, including Amtrak Tim. Okay, yeah, Tim.
And real quickly, sure. One of the callers didn't have time to stick around, but voteforjudges.org is what she recommended to look at the judge list.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
The judge list will keep you in the booth the longest.
For long. Right.
And Kathleen, and what was the name of what was that site again?
It's called voteforjudges.org.
Okay. Voteforjudges.org. I'm kind of curious because there's a lot of different bar associations. And Dick Kay was talking about this yesterday. My feeling is I don't understand why we have the average citizen voting for judges. That's just crazy. They don't know them. They're not in court. Have the legal firms make recommendations to committees or whatever. It's silly. And the guy that Dick Kay had on yesterday said that no judge has been kicked off the bench in one of these retention ballots since 1990. Okay. Shows you how effective that works. Or how effective that is. So I don't know why we do it. And I think it's one of the things that discourages people from voting. The length of the ballot. That's not good either. And our election officials should be paying attention to that. You know, you should be doing whatever you can to make voting easier. All right. A little while ago, I talked, and meaning several weeks, I don't know, a couple of months ago, about the Environmental Protection Agency approving a new version of a popular weed killer to be used on genetically modified corn and soybeans. You might have heard of it. It's called Enlist Duo. And it is a new version of 2,4-D, which is a weed killer. And it is being added because, well, many weeds have become resistant to glyphosate, which is Roundup, which is an herbicide commonly used on GMOs. And this new product, Enlist Duo, includes a combination of both 2,4-D and glyphosate. Yay! So this is a deal. Some folks, probably the chemical companies themselves, are concerned that their products are not effective anymore because some weeds have become resistant. And keep in mind, the whole GMO thing was partly the justification for it was, don't worry, we will use less chemicals. And now we find out that the chemicals we're using don't work anymore. So guess what? We have to use more chemicals. We're going to add 2,4-D to glyphosate. We're going to put 2,4-D and Roundup together. And then when that doesn't work, I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do. We'll add something else to it, probably down the road. So my friend Terry, who writes to me occasionally, sent me an email. She said, I wanted you to see this outstanding rant about the EPA's approval of Enlist Duo. She says, I get a CSA share from Montalbano Farms. Love the produce and the people now more than ever. And she sent me this newsletter that they had sent out, and whoever wrote this was on a bit of a rant. And it starts with, from the farm. Today I would like to say that I now truly and firmly believe that the entire flipping planet has lost its mind. In fact, I almost registered for the one-way mission to Mars until I realized that I would be taking other humans with me. I'm sure they don't want a disgruntled homicidal maniac on the ship anyway. The last straw was when the Environmental Protection Agency approved the latest herbicide for GMO corn and soybeans. Corn and soybeans, which, by the way, you eat or drink pretty much every single day, except they are not food, which is a story for another day. Apparently, the mission of the EPA is to determine accurately how much poison you can eat before you get really, really sick. Anyway, the EPA just had to do this, despite repeated and emphatic proclamations by chemical companies that weeds would not develop resistance because, you guessed it, the weeds have developed resistance. Just last week, the geniuses over at EPA approved this new poison cocktail. Conventional farmers are supposed to use this alongside the old poison. You remember the one that was supposed to be the very last one to kill all those nasty weeds. So now farmers will continue to spray poison, number one, all over the place, and for good measure, add a strong dose of poison number two, which incidentally is a primary component of Agent Orange. There's absolutely no way this could go wrong. Who wins here? You win. No, as usual, you lose. You get more poisons in your food. You get more poisons in your drinking water. You get more poisons in the air you breathe, and you're paying for it through billions and billions and billions of dollars in tax subsidies. On top of that, you're paying for it through billions and billions and billions of dollars in health care costs and interest payments, because remember, this is all borrowed money anyway, that go toward treating any number of completely preventable illnesses that stem from an unhealthy diet. So, farmers win. Ha! Wrong again. Those suckers are duped into believing that this time and for real, the poisons will work. Instead, farmers simply have to buy more and more chemical concoctions, which are so poisonous that farmers aren't allowed to even touch, by the way, to spray on their fields and plants. In a few years, weeds will develop resistance to this latest deadly brew, and the chemical companies will produce, voila, one that will really, honestly, and for sure work this time. Poison makers win. Bingo. The companies that make these toxins win big time. They sell more and more poisons. Then they take these giant bags of cash directly to the Capitol building, where they donate, quotation marks, to politicians' use. Then these same companies bribe these same politicians to give them tax breaks and tax credits because they create jobs, more air quotes. So, while most people would instantly recognize this as an obvious sign of imminent doom, Americans just go about their daily business, which consists of first buying a $5 cup of bitter coffee and second searching for snake with two heads on the internet. I, for one, and this is written by the person at Maltonbano Farms, I, for one, have had enough. From here on out, I will absolutely and positively restrict my internet searches to why do men have nipples? I bet you're looking forward to the next newsletter already. That's quite a rant. And I don't know who wrote that. I have to find out who wrote that. But Terry, thank you for sending that, because I read it and I went, yeah, I get it. I do. Unfortunately, I get it. And that's kind of the way we get duped. All right, let's go very quickly to Nick. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning. I just turned on the radio and heard you talking about the combination of pesticides, and I just brought me back to thinking I had just gotten I just recently left a job that we were spraying combination of herbicides all over the place. And
wait a second, you're licensed to do that?
Yes, I'm a certified arborist with an Illinois pesticide license.
Okay.
And so I would work for commercial tree companies, and we would, you know, during the growing season, spray ornamentals for private property, you know, private owners who own, let's say, a Colorado blue spruce, and we'd spray for a fungus, so I'd spray fungicides all over them, for, like, Rhizosphaeria and Cytosphera, which are two fungi that probably wouldn't exist if they didn't grow that tree in Illinois. hence the name Colorado.
I know. It's one of my very first Master Gardener courses. I'm going to forget the guy. Jim, I can't remember. It'll come back to me when we stop talking. But he said, you said the same thing. Why do you think they call it Colorado blue spruce?
Yes. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. I know we were talking about herbicides, but it kind of all trickles together. It's one of my biggest talking points whenever I go to conferences, and I say, look, this tree is natively known, in the Rocky Mountains at the timberline, 10,000 feet up in rocky, well-drained soil, yet people decide to plant them underneath their oaks in a wet spot, and it doesn't grow but
in clay,
more than six feet tall, and it's riddled with pests, and
right.
They'll spend thousands of dollars over the lifespan of this tree just to keep this thing looking, which they should just cut it down and plant a tree that's native or naturalized to this area. I mean, we're, 700 feet above sea level and traditionally swamp land. So I kind of know where you're going with it. It's just we spend so much on these chemical treatments when all we have to do is, I think it was a couple months ago, we were talking, and it's a cultural shock. We have to shock the public culturally and stop planting these unusable trees and plants and actually plant stuff that's made for here. So I'm sorry I digressed off of the first line, but I think it all ties together with just, you know, they're oil-based chemicals, and it's an unending loop.
Yeah, it just goes on and on, and as the guy pointed out in his rant there, is then the next one, don't worry, the next one will really take care of it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It's just that we just keep adding more and more chemicals. And one of the interesting things is I saw, and it's something we're going to talk about in the second hour, Scott Hoffman Black, who's the executive director of the Xerces Society.
That's the conversation it was a couple months ago, I remember hearing.
Oh, yeah. I tried to get him this today, but don't worry. The woman I have, Marla Spivak, is going to be wonderful. But he sent me a link, which I put on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. And it's a video by a group called Earth Focus. And it is about neonicotinoids. And they asked the question, are they the new DDT? And I will talk to Marla about that in the second hour.
I truly believe they are. I mean, I think that sudden colony collapse is a direct result from all of them.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out in the second hour. I'm glad you bring this up. But the thing was, in this half hour video that this group Earth Focus put together, and they've done a whole series of them. The question they ask is, are these things? This is the we never question whether these products are necessary for these crops. And some of the people they interview in this piece say, no, they're not. They don't. The pests that these people are talking about, that for which they invented these chemicals, really don't put that kind of pressure on the crops. In fact, they're putting crops side by side that use the chemicals and don't use the chemicals, and they're finding that the yields are no different. Or better,
correct.
Or better without the chemicals, and that is something we don't ever question. We just assume, you know, when Dow AgroScience comes out and says, "No, we got to have this," we go, "Oh, really?" Because we don't understand that we have to feed the world, and this is the only way we're going to feed the world, and it's killing us. You know, there's not going to be a world to feed if we keep doing this.
And I always, you know, after recently stopped working for doing those company with the chemicals, and it's been a relief because every time I'd come home from work, I was afraid to even hug my family or touch my baby because I was, we're in Illinois, and, you know, it's labeled in the state of California, you know, it could cause cancer. Well, it's okay in Illinois, right? But, you know, not really. I mean, that's my sarcasm of pesticide application.
Well,
but,
Nick, you know what they told you when you signed up, right?
Yeah.
They said this.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it, Fred.
Okay. So there you go. Hey, Nick, I got to go. I'm going to get Rick DeMaio on. Thanks for calling. I appreciate the comment.
I love Rick. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
In the green room.
You dig.
I love it when my listeners call in with things like that. Okay, now last week I received a message from my buddy Dan Costa, who wrote, this is what he wrote, just got locally laid at Brookhaven Market last night. Have to say, very good. End quote. I'm telling you, folks, if you get locally laid eggs, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out and find them. And they're all over the area. I give you some places where you can find them. You can go to locallylaid.com and find that out. If you pick them up and you like them, send me a short message, kind of like Dan did. You know, where did you get locally laid? And I will put it in a commercial, just like I did for Dan. You can find locally laid eggs at Big Apple Finer Foods in Chicago, Prisco's Fine Foods in Aurora, and Rogers Park Fruit Market in Chicago. Locally laid because local chicks are better.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up? Trouble breathing? Headaches? Sinus pressure? You're tired? Congested? Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Bring in meteorologist Rick DeMille. Rick, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mike. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Why? What are you doing? Are you still under the covers?
What was that again?
No, I can't. I was asking if you were still under the covers.
No. I'm above the covers. Actually, I'm out here in Galena, in Eagle Ridge area, and your signal 820 AM comes in loud and clear, very robust.
Cool. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I know. I've driven out west. You can pick it up all the way into Iowa. It's amazing. So you're always at interesting places there, Rick. You're always hiking somewhere or doing something.
Well, you know, I had to come out here to get away from those strong winds along the lakefront on Friday.
Oh, man. I have to tell you something about that. Halloween in my neighborhood, and I don't know what happened in other people's neighborhood.
A lot of leftover candy, right?
Yeah. I had exactly exactly three trick-or-treaters show up.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. And let me guess, their costume was a winter coat.
Pretty much.
Yeah, this was about as bad as it can get for a Halloween, and it really does. I mean, it's a shame because here it is, a Friday afternoon. The kids are like, "Oh my gosh, I can actually eat as much candy as I can without having to worry about going to sleep and waking up the next morning going to school."
I know it totally. I've never seen a worse weather for Halloween. I don't think I've ever in my whole life seen worse weather than we had. And of course, I'm in the city. So we were getting those waves of sleet coming in and rain and just, it was just nasty. And you know what? It would be sleeting and you would look up and off in the distance you'd see blue sky.
And you were far enough west where you could do that. I was actually along the lakefront. I went down to Lighthouse Beach at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Just so that I can say to you on the radio, I was at Lighthouse Beach at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And Mike, I don't think I've ever seen the waves as high as I've seen them. Probably not since about 1987 when the lake was at record high levels. And, you know, in some way, shape, and form, I'm kind of glad that we had weather like this, where the lake level was able to restore itself almost 20 inches higher than what it was last year. And the reason why is when I was on the climate change task force about 4 or 5 years ago, everything that was being said was, well, since it happened now and this is happening now, everything's going to be like this for the rest of the time around here, where we're going to get lower lake levels. And I'm like, you know, you can't say that. You have to kind of, you know, put different pieces together. Weather is very complicated. Climate is very complicated. So in a way, I think the storm kind of humbled us because from a climate change standpoint and global warming standpoint, everybody kept saying about how the lake levels were going to drop because we're going to have higher rates of evaporation because we had a couple of those summers that occurred. So we said, well, if this is happening now, it's going to always happen, right? And I'm like, no, you really can't say that. And sure enough, look what happened, Mike. We had an incredibly cold winter. The lake covered itself up with ice. We had not only hardly any evaporation off the lake, which allowed the lake to retain its levels, but then we had phenomenal amounts of snowfall and then rain, and the lake basically said, you know what, this is what I can do if you just let me do it, and it did it. And then we had this amazing storm that blew wave heights up to not only 20 to 21 feet, but it also, you know, blew onto Lakeshore Drive. You know, we've never seen that before. So I think from the standpoint, Mother Nature is always going to kind of give you something different than what you expect if you oversimplify things. And clearly you can't oversimplify nature.
You're so right, Rick. I happened to hear a conversation with a different meteorologist on a different radio station talking about the anomaly here in the Midwest. And, you know, the question was, well, why are the Great Lakes, why have they gotten so much water? And why is the level going up? And he said, basically, it's an anomaly. That's the definition right. of an anomaly. It's this portion. We had this portion of the country, of this continent, where we had cooler weather, less evaporation, more moisture. And as you just pointed out, Rick, all those things combined to give us a higher lake level.
And on top of that, when you have two anomalies occur at the same time, what do you have? You have natural disasters, and that's what we had. In a sense, you had, I mean, the three northbound lanes of Lakeshore Drive were covered with about 2 to 3 feet of water, Mike. I've never seen that before. That was pretty amazing stuff.
It was. You sent me some really amazing photos and of course,
videos, yeah.
And videos. Just crazy. I'm glad I wasn't there. You know.
Well, you know, it was interesting. If the city knew about it, they had closed off the bike path, which was a wise thing to do. But then when I heard them say, "Well, we got the flooding under control because we got the trucks out there to clean out the sewers because they were clogged," and I'm thinking to myself, "Geez, maybe that should have been done beforehand." You know, I'm not bashing the city, but you know, these are the kind of things that you kind of think ahead of time to help mitigate, you know, potential problems like that. It's not like Lakeshore Drive is not busy at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. But, you know, this storm system that developed over us was basically on the backside. We were on the backside of it. You know, we're talking about 12 to 15 inches of snow above 3,000 to 4,000 feet in parts of the mountains of, you know, North Carolina. Now, granted, it is the end of October. These things can happen, but it shows you what happens when you get into these, again, instead of these progressive patterns, very up and down, almost meridional flow, where the flow goes due north and then comes straight down, and you get storm systems like this. And this was pretty severe. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this in nearly 30 years of watching the weather in Chicago, and certainly the results were less than disastrous, but it showed you what can happen, obviously, when two anomalies come together.
And I think you pointed out last week, and then I heard it again this week, that was actually the remnants of a Pacific storm.
Yeah, there were a couple of pieces of energy that came through parts of the northern sections of the Pacific Ocean, which were remnants of typhoons. Whether or not this was the central part of it, and I think I don't know if we can really stretch that. But what it did do is it built this incredible large amount of warmth over the lower 48, and when that happens, is you compress the temperature pattern such that you create a lot of cold air bottled up across northern sections of Canada, which there has been a lot of. And clearly, we have not been absent of any cold outbreaks. If you look back in retrospect, the month of October, even though the books say 0.7 degrees below normal, if you look at the average high temperatures for the month of October, we were 2.7 degrees below normal. We've had a lot of cold air outbreaks come down the length of the lake. We had a couple of records set October 4th. We had the coldest high temperature ever. You go back September 11th, we had the coldest high temperature ever for that date. We had snow on the 4th. We had snow the other day. So it's not like the pattern has been absent of any volatility. And when you head into the month of November, it seems like it could only get worse because we're kind of heading into that regime where patterns like this like to develop this time of the year. So bottom line, the month of October, 2.5 degrees below normal for the afternoon highs. Overnight lows were not as cold, but I was out here on Friday night, and we got down to a low of 18 degrees, missed a record by two.
Wow.
And think, yeah, it was pretty cold. And think about it, on Monday, we were close to 80 in this part of the woods. So a lot of variability, and that seems to be the case as we head into the month of November.
Have you changed your outlook at all?
No, not at all.
You mean for the winter? I mean for the whole winter.
Yeah, not at all. I said that we were going to have probably an early start to winter. When I spoke to a bunch of snow people back in September and again back in October, someone said, "What about the possibility of any early lake effect snow?" I said, if anything, the chances are much greater. The only problem is that the lakes are a little bit colder, so that usually tends to slow the the chances down a little bit. But look what we had. I mean, we had the setup for which could have been a lake effect snow event. I mean, the Weather Service had a 1 to 3 inch snowfall forecast that I think we got about an inch in some areas. And I think that was partly due to the fact that, Mike, the wind was so strong. I mean, we had 60 to 65 mile per hour wind gusts on the south end of the lake. The lake level, the wave height reached 21.7 feet, which was the second highest ever. And studies have shown when you have too much wind in the lower levels of the atmosphere, the thermals that develop off the lake that you need to get lake effect clouds almost become ripped apart too fast. So I think the wind was probably too strong for lake effect snow. But if you would take the same event and you would advance it about 3 to 4 weeks, you can easily get 6 to 12 inches of snow because the lake would be cold enough. What happens with this setup is that when you get lake effect snow, there's so much warmth coming off the lake that the snow doesn't have a chance to really stick on the ground. But I'm looking at, you know, reports of 60, 65 mile per hour winds along the lakefront in Gary, Indiana, and horizontally driven snow at a quarter of a mile. And people are watching this on TV in other parts of the country to go, how do you guys live there? And I think we just say, I don't know, it's kind of fun to talk about. We don't really go out and expose ourselves to it, but it certainly shows you the forces of Mother Nature.
It really does. So I guess more unpredictability.
More volatile is, I guess, the best way to say it.
Yeah.
I know where you were going with that. I do. Okay, so in the last 30 seconds, we get back into south winds today. We had an afternoon high yesterday of only 45. Today we'll make it up to about 52 or 53. Normal high for the first of the month is 56. By the end of the month, we're down to 40. So November sees the largest drop-off in afternoon temperatures. 60s tomorrow with rain, actually near 60 on rain tomorrow. Cooling off on Tuesday, and then generally in the 40s on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. So more like mid-November for the first week of November, and maybe more snow in about 2 weeks. We could talk more about that next week.
All right. That sounds great. Well, enjoy Galena there, Rick.
I love the leaves, Mike. It's great out here.
Oh, great. I'm glad somebody's having a good time this morning. I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
All right. In the second hour, bees, pollinators. What's happening? How can we protect them? There are things that you can do in your own backyard. We'll talk to Dr. Marla Spivak from University of Minnesota. So stick around.
They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise and put up a fucking line.
Welcome to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show, the country's best deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every week and broadcast from the studios of WCPT, AM, and FM in Chicago. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is sponsored by Locally Laid Egg Company, because local chicks are better. Go to locallylaid.com. And by Attack of the Killer Asparagus, the funniest book about gardening you will ever read. Go to aroundtheblockpress.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone. To be paradise, put up a fucking line.
Bop, 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 bop. Last week, we got into a conversation, and Carol was a part of this, too, because I know you were helping me track down some stuff about batteries. And I was ranting a little bit because, well, places like the EPA tell you now, just put your alkaline batteries in the trash. No need to recycle here. Nothing to see. Move along. Did a little research on it. And I got a couple of emails, too, this week. One from Marty in Chicago. He wrote, he said, when I went online to look for sources of rechargeable batteries, I am confronted by a lot of technical gobbledygook about some rechargeables being better than others.
And the thought came to me to suggest that your show do 20 minutes or so about the topic of what to look out for when buying rechargeables, what chemical technologies might be better than others, which batteries might be better for the environment, et cetera, et cetera. And I definitely have to do that. I just don't know a battery expert. I have to do a little research and find somebody who knows what they're talking about. But meanwhile, I did some research and I put some links up there about recycling batteries. Now, what I did find out is there's one place in the country where you must recycle all of your batteries. Anybody want to guess what state that might be? California, maybe? Of course it is. And they won't let you put. So my feeling, and they said that in the year 2000, I believe it was, they used 500 million batteries for home use, half a billion. That was just in year 2000. And I think it was just in the one state. Gives you an idea how many batteries out there are being used and how many are ending up in landfills.
Just piling up.
And yet we have our government telling us it's okay. Just throw them in the trash. Just put them in the trash. Nothing to see here. Well, you know, we can't get the... There isn't enough metal in there to make it worthwhile for us to... But we can just pile up a half a billion batteries. I don't get it. Anyway, so I put a bunch of links there. I found a place called Battery University. Seemed to be very resourceful there. 1800recycling.com, earth911.com. A list of battery recycling places where you can recycle batteries in the Chicago area. The problem is a lot of them are stores, and sometimes you got to call the store, specific store, and say, hey, do you take these? And sometimes they'll say, well, no, we don't anymore. It ain't as easy as it should be. That's the problem. It's not easy. So I just want to let folks know that those links are on my website. Also, I want to remind people, before I get to Dr. Spivak here, I want to remind people of two events that are going on. The yard waste pickup in Chicago starts tomorrow, meaning that for 3 weeks, you can call 311 and have your yard waste picked up by the city of Chicago. Now, I've got a couple of bags of yard waste that I'm going to donate to the cause. I mean, the idea being that this stuff does not go into landfills, but rather is composted. I'm kind of wondering how that's all going to work. So I will be on the horn calling 311 and seeing how they pick it up. But that starts tomorrow. It goes to the 21st of November. And also on the 8th is the citywide Clean and Green Volunteer Program. And that's next Saturday when folks get together to beautify communities and collect yard waste. Hold on to that yard waste. Make sure it gets to Streets and Sand and the private companies that are picking this up to go to composting sites. Now, I'm hoping to get numbers from the city of Chicago about that and how much in terms of weight went to the composting operations. The other thing I wanted to remind folks of is pumpkin composting. We talked with Kay McKean from Scarce last week. First ever pumpkin pitch. I'm calling it a pumpkin pitch. She's not calling it. Will County is calling it a pumpkin pitch, and I've stolen that from them because I like that title. Pumpkin. First ever pumpkin pitch. November 8th. I hope you held on to your pumpkins. They're still there. Don't toss them in the garbage unless you're composting. You can toss them in the compost pile. That's great. But if you don't want to do that in your own compost pile in Wheaton, in Elmhurst, in Glen Ellen, in Will County, Will County is next Friday from 6 a.m. to noon. But the others are Saturday from 8 a.m. I'm sorry, from 9 a.m. to noon. So you got 3 hours in Wheaton, Elmhurst, Glen Ellen. I think there's some other locations. Go to the Scarce website, which is scarceecoed.org. And that link is also on my website. So there you go. I hope you're all taking advantage of that. So with that,
let us go to the phone, bring in Dr. Marla Spivak from the University of Minnesota. She is the Distinguished McKnight University Professor of, did you say apiculture or is it apiculture?
Apiculture.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I said it before, and I started doubting myself. And social insects. You are also a MacArthur Award winner. And I'm just convinced they lost my phone number. I'm not sure why they haven't called me. you've been on my radar for a long time, Dr. Spivak, because I have been following. It's amazing to think that just as a reporter, as a guy in the media, I have been covering this story now since 2007. And I've written about it and I've talked about it on my radio, various radio programs. And that, of course, is the decline of our pollinators, specifically our honeybees. Sometimes people refer to colony collapse disorder, which I became aware of, as I said, in 2007. But what's interesting about that is I do talks for garden organizations, and I found this chart when I was going to be talking about this, and it showed the decline of honeybees since the 1940s, and it had started already. It was already in decline before CCD hit in 2006. It obviously it got a lot worse at that point. But that is something that we had been concerned with for a while, isn't it?
That's true. Actually, bees have been having trouble since World War II, and it coincides with a change in our agricultural practices.
Is that having to do with chemical use?
It's a number of things. So we started growing larger and larger monocrops, and with that we started using more herbicides and insecticides and different formulations. And we just changed our landscapes, not only in agricultural landscapes, but our urban landscapes. If you look around, you see a lot of lawn, which is also a monocrop, monoculture. So it's just the way that we've been landscaping. We tend to eliminate a lot of what we think are weedy plants, but many of them are flowering plants that bees really need for their good nutrition.
You're right that we have changed. And one of the things that happened out of World War II, and I'm sure you're quite aware of this, is we came out of the war and we had created a lot of chemicals for war use. And now we had stockpiles of chemicals and we needed a market. And and we created it, which was largely suburban. Some of it agricultural, but this is what I tell folks all the time is the brainwashing of America, especially the homeowner who is told that the real way to happiness lies in a can that you can find at a big box store and take home and spray on something, even though you might not be sure exactly what you're spraying or why you're spraying it.
Yes, but all of that's about to change because as people start paying attention to bees and other pollinators and people realize that they need flowers, then when you start planting flowers for bees, then you start paying attention to what you put on those flowers. If you're putting out food or flowers for bees, then you must pay attention to what you're applying in your homes and your backyards and in agricultural settings so that the products don't drift or get into the flowers that you're planting for food. So just as people want good, clean food, so do bees. It's very, very similar. And I think that's why Cascadian Farms has started a big promotion through their organic division. Well, they are organic, to promote good food for people and bees. It's super important.
I'm glad you went in that. See, you're doing the PR stuff for me. I love it. Cascadian Farm.
Anytime.
Yeah. Well, they contacted me and they said, you know, would you like to talk to Dr. Spivak? And I said, absolutely. And I know that. And then I communicated also with Scott Hoffman Black from the Xerces Society. He's been on this show before. Let's talk just very briefly about the Bee Friendlier program. Part of it will benefit the University of Minnesota Bee Lab. Well, tell me a little bit about the Bee Lab.
Well, the B-Lab at the University of Minnesota has been in existence since 1918, clearly long before I was there. So there have been a very good bee program at the university a long time, but now the facility is really run down, and the state of Minnesota has recognized this, and they've approved funding for a new facility. We need to fundraise for part of it, but we're almost there, and it's getting really exciting. So in that new facility will be the honeybee program that I run. I also do some research on native bees. Some of my graduate students do. But we'll be hiring a new professor to study habitat needs of pollinators, particularly our native pollinators. And so it's also at the university, they're going to build a separate facility at the Arboretum that will be for the public, and it will be the Discovery Center for Bees and Pollinators. And that was funded through generous donations from the Tashtian family.
Getting back to Cascadian Farm, they are helping out with the Xerces Society and the Bee Lab at the University of Minnesota. They're encouraging people to plant wildflowers this fall, and then again in the spring, obviously, because we're getting to the end of the planting season here. Visit befriendlier.com. That's B-E-E hyphen friendlier. .com, and you can watch a video, a Bee Friendlier flower bombing. There's a booth, on that site that you can go to, buy organic products. Look for donation codes on select Cascadian Farm products. And then if you use these, these access codes will help drive donations to the cause of choice, which might be for you the Xerces Society or the Minnesota Bee Lab, or bee conservation training for farmers and gardeners conducted by the Xerces Society. And for every code redeemed at befriendlier.com before December 31st, so you have to the end of this year, Cascadian Farm will donate 50 cents up to $150,000 for all consumer actions to the Xerces Society or the University of Minnesota Bee Lab. So this is a good reason to pick up products from Cascadian Farm, because they put their money where their mouth is, and they're out to help the bees. Now, we're talking to Dr. Marla Spivak, who is from the University of Minnesota. Let me ask you, we know that our honeybees are in decline. What about our native pollinators?
Well, we don't have as much information, but we certainly need to be paying attention to them. And we do have, of the native pollinators, we know about some problems with bumblebees. So in the world, there's about 20,000 species of bees and approximately 4,000 in North America. And in the upper Midwest, in Chicago area, I really don't know how many native species there are, probably 400, maybe up to 500 species of bees. And within those, there's many kinds, obviously, and some of them are bumblebees. And we have the most information about the bumblebees, and unfortunately, there are certain species that are hard to find anymore. It's scary. And the Xerces Society is doing a great job at conservation of many of these native species.
It is disturbing that you can't find some of these species. We can't make up for it with honeybees because they're having their own problems. There's several things at work here. One of which, honeybees are under a lot of stress all the time because they're shipped around to the different parts of the country. They're under attack from varroa mites, from fungal diseases, from low level pesticide. We're still at a point where most scientists, and perhaps you can disagree with me, from what I understand, most scientists still don't really have the smoking gun for CCD, do they?
Well, I think most scientists agree that bees are declining for many causes, that if there's a smoking gun, it's many things all at once. And, of course, that doesn't make it an easy thing to solve, but I think as the research comes out, we're learning that nutrition really is at the base of all of our bees' problems. And, of course, bees, the only things they eat are pollen and nectar from flowers. So it turns out it's a really nice way to provide nutritional needs for bees is to simply plant a lot more flowers. Now, where to plant them and how and which flowers to plant gets tricky. But still, this is an very active area of research and policy, both nationally and in many states. So it's a great time for bees, and we're at a pivot or a turning point.
You sound really positive. I'm the dark side here saying we're going to heck in a handbag, and you say you see us turning the corner on this. Why do you feel that way?
Because we are turning the corner. Just because you're doing this interview with me, this would have never happened, you know, before 2007. So since that time, as bees started dying, unfortunately, as people started being very aware that bees are in trouble, people are also really, really willing to take steps to turn the corner for and with the bees. So, and this is across the board throughout the nation. As far as I can tell, there's nobody in opposition to helping bees by planting flowers and paying attention to pesticide use.
Yeah, but the pesticides are still created. All right, let me bring up a problem. Later on today, I will look at my email and I will get an email from some environmental organization that is going to say neonicotinoids are killing the bees. We have to ban neonicotinoids. And as you said, and we really don't know what all the circumstances are that are resulting in bee decline. Certainly that's one of them. I mean, those people, they've got the smoking gun. They say it's the neonicotinoids. In fact, I was talking earlier on the show about the video that Scott Hoffman Black from the Xerces Society showed me about neonicotinoids. And in this video that Earth Focus put together, the folks state, we really don't question why we use them, except that the chemical companies say we have to have them. And the people in this interview said, we don't really need them, that those crops would probably do just as well. But there are folks out there, Dr. Spivak, who say, you know, if we stop using those chemicals, our agricultural system will crash and burn and we will not be able to feed the planet. Do you believe that?
Oh, boy. So I don't believe the latter. I think neonicotinoids can be a problem for bees and other insects. But they're not the only problem out there. We're using a lot of insecticides and herbicides and fungicides, and we use tank mixes. So, yeah, I think the neonicotinoids, they're too prevalent. They're too widely used. They're used on too many crops, I think. And, yes, we need to ratchet back that use a little bit and think more carefully about it. It's a much bigger thing than that. So some people use the neonicotinoids as an entry point into environmental issues, and I think that's absolutely great. If that's the entry point to understand all the other things that we could change in our environment to make it better for humans and wildlife and bees, then that's great. But it's even if we banned all the neonicotinoids, in several years, we would have just another problem with the registration of older compounds or new ones that may be just as harmful. It's a matter of using pesticides judiciously.
That's Dr. Marla Spivak, Distinguished McKnight University Professor of Apiculture and Social Insects at the University of Minnesota. We're talking about the Cascadian Farm Be Friendlier campaign. Speaking about being friendly, a lot of people want to plant flowers for bees. But word has come out in the last year or so that perhaps some of those flowers in some of the places that you buy them have been treated with neonicotinoids. How does one protect one's garden from the use of that if they're buying flowers at a box store that has treated, that has purchased those plants from somebody who used neonicotinoids?
Even that is changing. So I'm learning that some of these big box stores, and I certainly know that big nurseries here in the Twin Cities have already changing. They're already changing their practices. So we have a bill that was passed last legislative session in Minnesota that nurseries that are advertising plants as pollinator friendly, those plants cannot be pretreated with a neonicotinoid. So things are, it's a law now, and that's a great thing. And I know some big box stores voluntarily, without it being a law, have decided that, yes, we are going to source our plants or grow our plants without the use of neonicotinoids, so that homeowners, when they're buying flowering plants to put in their gardens, can be sure that they're not contaminated. It's a great thing.
But that you're saying that's in Minnesota.
In Minnesota, but I'm hearing about it from other states
and
around the nation.
It would be good.
And I think it's just a matter. It's a consumer-driven thing. So as many people walk into a store and ask, are these flowering plants pre-treated with a neonic, I think the suppliers and the stores are going to start paying attention.
Yeah, and consumers need to know to ask that, too. It's important. Unfortunately, I suspect that it's at certain box stores there are employees who will not have an answer for you, which is also a reason I always tell people go to independent garden centers to buy their plants. If we want to keep those around for a while, if we don't want them to go the way of the bookstores, we need to support them. And yeah, those are the people who have information. That's where you're going to get information, and their livelihoods depend on it. So they will know where their plants have come from.
That's a great point. Yeah, there's a lot of native plant nurseries. They certainly wouldn't be using the neonicotinoids or any kind of organic plant nursery. Or those are great choices to buy plants from.
You mentioned bumblebees and bumblebees under threat. A story that happened last year, which must have given you pause, was in Oregon, where 50,000 bumblebees were killed by a neonicotinoid product that was applied to linden trees that were in bloom. And, of course, the bees came to the tree and died. What did not happen out of that? Because that made a lot of news. And then it got kind of forgotten. And 6 months later, there were fines assessed. The fines were under $3,000 in total for 50,000 bees lost. 50,000 bumblebees. I think this is part of our problem, is that if we're going to protect our bees, we need to make it hurt when you do something stupid like that.
Yes, it's true. So we apply, especially in cities, we're applying a lot of insecticide just for cosmetic use.
Right.
And that incident is a perfect example of that. There are linden trees in a parking lot, and aphids were getting in the trees. And as the aphids feed, of course, they secrete or excrete a lot of honeydew, sticky substance, and it was dropping on the cars. And so to prevent stickiness on our cars, we injected, or they sprayed, one of the neonicotinoid compounds on the trees. And then it, as the tree bloomed and flowered and bees started feeding on it, it killed many, 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 as you say, thousands of bumblebees. And so that's a kind of a wake-up call to everybody. We can wash our cars, but we can't replace the bees. So
yeah. So
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, though, the problem was, in that case, nobody had ever complained about the honeydew on their cars. This was totally prophylactic in nature. This company went out there without thinking about it, and just said, well, of course we got to do that. And that, to me, represents that kind of thinking is what's killing us. Thinking that, well, we can't let this happen to these cars. Well, why not? You can wash a car. And nobody had ever complained about it.
I agree. We've gone overboard with our use of all kinds of chemicals to keep our environment clean and sterile. And the same goes true with our antibiotics in our livestock. So there's a lot of places where the pendulum has swung way too far. But I think we're right at that place where the big correction is happening now. This is a good time to stand up and help the pendulum move back a little bit the other way, if not a lot.
And again, there you go, over to the positive. What signs do you have that people are moving in the right direction?
everywhere I go, people are interested in bees. They want to know what they can do to help. And just that alone shows me that everybody is, that the world is paying attention. And as I said before, the steps to help bees can be very simple. Just putting out good, clean flowers, in other words, uncontaminated flowers, everywhere from your balcony all the way to roadsides and rights-of-way utility corridors. Those are, you know, incredible things that could help diversify our environment, which is greatly needed, and help bees and other wildlife and birds, and it just goes on from there.
Yeah, the other week I was talking about a corridor, biodiverse corridor, whatever you want to call it. Some people are talking about milkweed corridors for our endangered monarchs. Do you know of an organization that's specifically working on that?
Yes, of course, the Monarch Watch program.
Okay.
Running out of both University of Minnesota, as it turns out, and University of Kansas. And there's a lot of people involved with this thing. And the Xerces Society is also involved with planting monarchs to help, planting milkweeds to help our monarchs.
This is great, and I think people should get involved in that. We're talking to Dr. Marla Spivak, distinguished McKnight University Professor of Apiculture at University of Minnesota, also part of the Bee Lab there. If you have a quick question, she's only going to be on for a few more minutes. 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Dr. Spivak, hang on for a second. I will be right back with you, okay?
Okay.
Mother Nature has just sent you a warning. It was a shot across the bow on Halloween. We talked to Rick DeMaio earlier about that. And the warning is get your fall gardening chores done right now before it's too late. And one of those final tasks of the season is to get your lawn in order. If you like lawns, you know my philosophy, when in doubt, rip it out. However, there are people who like lawns, and as long as it's not too much of it, I can live with that. So why not give it a fall boost with Milorganite Organic Nitrogen Fertilizer? Your lawn will benefit from an application now. It will green up faster next spring and recover more quickly from winter damage. Give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening's Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening's features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
This is Mike Novak. Enjoy local food all winter long at Winter Farmers Markets, hosted by 15 different Chicago faith congregations on select Saturdays and Sundays from November through March. Your purchase of local sustainably produced food helps support regional farmers. The markets are organized by Faith in Place, a nonprofit that inspires people of diverse faiths to care for the earth through connection, education, and advocacy. Go to faithinplace.org and click on Winter Farmers Markets for a schedule and to learn more.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
Inexplicable, Captain. They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf. Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak.
I'm familiar with his work.
Mike Novak was one of the smartest, funniest people in the horticultural world of the 21st century.
Sound red alert. Shields up. Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe, author of my favorite children's stories.
Captain, I am attempting to access a copy of the masterpiece. It seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. Aroundtheblockpress.com. Yes, Mr. Watt.
Yes, Captain. Aroundtheblockpress.com.
How many times can I say it? Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on WCPT AM and FM. We are talking to Dr. Marla Spivak, who's from the University of Minnesota and part of the B Lab there. What are you working on right now, Dr. Spivak? Obviously, you're trying to get the B Lab back up to snuff here. What in particular are you working on in terms of the health of our pollinators?
Right. So traditionally in my lab, we've done a lot of research on bee health, and mostly we focus on ways bees can keep themselves healthy. So kind of their natural medicines, if you will, their natural defenses. So for many years, we bred bees enhanced bees for a trait that they have naturally, which we call hygienic behavior. And that's a trait that some bees are able to sniff out, detect diseased brood, and they eliminate it from the nest, kind of like a cell in the immune system. And more currently, we're studying plant resins that bees collect. They scrape them off the leaves of some trees like poplar or cottonwood trees. And they bring these resins back to the nest where we call it propolis. And they use them as medicines inside the nest. It's quite amazing. Humans have harvested propolis from the nest for many, many years, actually since biblical times, for human medicine. So we're starting to unravel what it does to help the bees.
Are we making any headway with CCD, or are we still losing, like 50%, 30% of the hives sometimes? It kind of depends on the year, doesn't it?
Sure does. So on average, somewhere around 30% of all of our nation's honeybee colonies die off every winter. And, you know, of course, it varies. This last winter, it was down to about 22 or 23% loss. And we're hoping it stays low again. Now, the reasons they're dying, at first, these were dying from symptoms that we called colony collapse disorder, which was described as rapid disappearance of bees. We're not seeing those particular symptoms so much. Of that 30% mortality, there's only a very small percent that's due to those specific symptoms. And instead, we see bees dying from many, many reasons, very complicated.
So they're not just disappearing the way they were several years ago?
No, we don't see that anymore. They're still dying. I'm not trying to downplay the situation, but the specific symptoms that we were seeing in 2006 and 2007 are really not seen very much anymore.
But how can this remain a viable business? I've talked to beekeepers who say it's really devastating on a personal level when that many bees die. I mean, these people are affected by that. And then on a business level, it makes it really hard to stay afloat.
Right. Beekeepers love their bees. So they're different than livestock managers or something else. You know, the beekeepers, even those that have thousands of colonies of bees, really love their bees. Their bees are part of their family and their livelihood, and it's just simply not sustainable to take a 30% loss of your family or your business every year. It's extremely difficult for them to replace the losses, and they have to bring up their numbers just so that we have sufficient number of colonies for pollination contracts across the United States. Very difficult situation.
Yeah, and one of those is in California with the almond crop. This one always just amazes me. From what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, somewhere around 60% of our
honeybee colonies are taken to California just to pollinate this one crop?
Yes, about 1.6 million hives of bees are transported across the United States to pollinate about 800,000 acres of almonds. So two colonies of bees per acre of almonds. We are the major growers and exporters of almonds in the world, and it's a crop that absolutely requires bee pollination. There simply are not enough honeybee colonies in California or enough native bees in the area to affect that much pollination of that big of a crop. So we think we have somewhere between 2.5 million hives of bees in the United States, and 1.6 of them are moved to California. So there you go.
That's, you know, from what I've read about bees, just moving a hive is stressful on a bee. Bees are
not
very...
Not really.
No? Okay.
Bees actually like to be in a truck that's vibrating. They're kind of like babies in a car seat. Once you get them in the car and moving, they tend to calm down. So the bees in the truck are okay. Being trucked long distances, you know, from all the way from Florida to California, is kind of a long ride, just as it would be for you, for me, in a car. But really, the trucking is not the issue. It's that bees get on the truck already diseased sometimes because they have these parasites, they have viruses, maybe they've been weakened by pesticides. And then when you travel in a weakened condition, then things can get worse. Very similar to humans on an airplane, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that the bees actually enjoy the ride. That's good.
Yeah. Okay, on the truck.
But what they don't enjoy is being diseased, and they don't enjoy losing their broods. And let me ask a question that has bothered me, and maybe you don't know the answer to this. Is there ever a danger of having that many bees in one place to pollinate a crop? What if some sort of catastrophe happened there? Wouldn't we be in trouble losing like 2/3 of our bees?
Right. You mean a catastrophe where all the bees collapsed all at once, for example?
Or something else. I mean, is the almond crop worth it?
I guess that depends on who you ask. You ask the almond growers and they'll say absolutely.
Yes, they will.
I think many people eat a lot of almond products and almond milk. And so a lot of people would say almonds are a vital part and a nutritious part of our diet.
But they also take up a lot of moisture.
Yes,
you know,
they do.
And
they
a lot of water to grow, and they need this to be coddled to produce the nut. And it makes me wonder if there are alternatives. And I know it's a huge industry in California, and I'm not trying to take down the industry. I'm just looking at, you know, they're growing a crop that demands a lot of water in a drought area.
Right.
And shipping a lot of these bees.
It's a good question, and we should be looking at it carefully. I agree. But these are trees that are planted, and it takes several years for them to come to bear fruit. So this is a long-term crop that is quite a big energy and water suck for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Dr. Marla Spivak from University of Minnesota, I want to remind folks, of course, that this is all part of what Cascadian Farm is doing to help raise money for bees. And to make people aware of the issues of bee loss. And if you want to participate, buy something from Cascadian Farm. Go to their website. I've got all the links here on mine. And be part of the Bee Friendlier program and get that money donated to the University of Minnesota Bee Lab or the Xerces Society. These are great causes, and we need it. And as Dr. Spivak says, we're turning the corner. I'm gonna walk away from this positively. How's that?
I think that's a very good thing. I think that's a great way to go because we have turned the corner. So this is a good time for bees. Let's go help them out.
Sounds great. Dr. Spivak, I hope we get to talk again sometime soon.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Have a great Sunday. It's the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, AM and FM. We're going out to LaSalle County in just a couple of minutes, so stick around.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Don't say Rick DeMaio didn't warn you. While we're likely to have a few reasonably nice days before the end of the year, the Halloween surprise this year was surprise. The cold weather is here. And, oh, it's a shame we don't have Helen. I wonder what she's dressed up like today. And I can play this for her.
Alive. It's alive. It's alive.
But the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine has some ideas about surviving the next few months, especially if you like flowering plants. How about African violets? You say you can't keep them alive? Wow, you're a total loser. There are more than 17,000 different cultivars that are easy to grow, adapt, thrive, and bloom almost continuously. But not only that, the newer varieties feature a wide range of colors, sizes, and foliage, and now come in shades of blue, purple. Actually, I wrote prupal. Prupal. I like that. Prupal, lavender, pink, red, green, cream, yellow, and white. Now, don't you feel silly? Speaking of that, the final issue of the year always features my column that dismantles popular Christmas carols with a ball-peen hammer and scatters their pieces all over the living room floor. Fun! Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Pick one up at newsstands all over town or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Before I get to Diane Gassman, who's patiently standing or sitting, waiting on hold, be right with her. I noticed that Green Diva Lynn is having a birthday today. So is Lamanda Joy from the Peterson Garden Project. Happy birthday, you guys, if you're listening. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Carol Brewer in the booth there, in the Ebola-proof booth here at WCPT. I'm looking, I'm seeing all the tweets you got on there and the Facebook. You have to do double duty here and triple duty because you're answering the phones as well. So
yeah, I've got my caffeine tea going, and so I'm just doing it back here, so it's fine.
And I appreciate that.
It's all good.
All right, great. Let's go to the phone line. Let's bring in Diane Gassman from LaSalle County, Illinois. Diane, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Better than you, because I don't have
probably
because I don't have to live next to a big old sand pile that blows when the winds get to 50 miles an hour.
This is true. We've had quite a week out here in LaSalle County.
I'll bet you did. I mean, I got some photos from you guys that I immediately popped up on Facebook, and we actually have, I think, do we have one on the, not on the homepage, but on this week's show, we've got one of those photos of the sand blowing in LaSalle County this week. That must have been quite a Friday you had.
Friday was the worst day. I think the wind gust exceeded 40 to 50 miles per hour, so it was the worst day. There was blowing and drifting sand. It's in our driveways, on our patios, on our decks, mailboxes. So, yeah, we were able to write the word northern white sand in those on our mailbox. So, yeah, it was.
Did you take a photo of that?
Oh, yes.
I want a photo of that one with northern white sand.
Which is the name of the sand company, of course.
Yes.
That's the mm-hmm. Is that the one across the street from you?
That is the one that is directly across the street from us, yes.
Yeah. In case you've been on the dark side of the moon, I've been covering this for a while. We're going on 3 years now, which is pretty amazing. I just can't believe it. Come December, it will be 3 years that we've been talking about this. And the idea that LaSalle County is becoming like the moon in that it's being carved out parcel by parcel. Big old pits that are going to be there for all eternity. Diane and her husband live across the street from one. I've talked to other people in the community. It's just terrifying. And you really, you know, what they tell you, of course, oh, it's not that dangerous and it's not going to be that big a deal. And the truck traffic is really, we'll keep an eye on it. And then what happens is you get a day like Friday and you get 50-mile-an-hour winds and it's all over the place, isn't it?
It is. And I think what was most shocking to me was we had been complaining and filed formal complaints all week. And on Friday, when it was really to the point of almost unlivable conditions out here, I made some phone calls. And I think I was just surprised by the response from the IEPA. At first they told me, when I called the IEPA, I said, you know, we at this point would like a formal violation filed against this company. And I was told that couldn't happen right away. We had to have an inspector come out. Well, by the time the inspector will be here next week, the sand isn't at the level it is now in terms of blowing and drifting sand. So I questioned them about using our still photos. We have tons of video. Well, we're not really sure we can use that. So
wow. Wow.
Yeah, so then as the conversation proceeded, I continued to request a formal violation be filed. So the gentleman I was talking with informed me that, yes, a 9A nuisance violation is what I was looking at, which violates emissions that leave the property. And this is the part that I couldn't believe. He questioned me about the prevailing winds and said, well, are they consistently prevailing at more than 20 miles per hour? And I said, well, this past week it has been. And I said, today, you know, we're probably up 30 or 40 with gusts even higher. And what he told me was that there is no way to control this. Therefore, this violation cannot be enforced. And I almost jumped out of the phone at him and I said, you approved this out in the middle of farm property, you know, prime farm ground, know that there are prevailing winds constantly, and this is at ground level. This is not in a pit. And you're telling me that this is now unenforceable because the winds are more than 20 miles per hour? And he said, that's the way it goes.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah. So I just
How
want
about
the
that?
Listeners to know that.
Gotta love that IEPA. They're the same people that you call them up and you say, what do you do with my spent batteries? And they say, oh, throw them in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I was shocked.
So really, what's your...
Basically, we have no...
You have no recourse.
No. Not with them, at least. So, but this is a nuisance, and now it's becoming a harmful nuisance. I mean, this week, you know, my husband's home, he's retired, was out taking pictures. He's had, you know, the nose burning, has had congestion all week, and I believe it's because of the increase in the sand. It's been terrible this week. So
I don't even know how you can breathe out there. I mean, it just seems like it's impossible. And the fact that you have – so the IEPA is supposed to be the agency that you complain to. Is there any other agency? Can you go to the Attorney General? Can you go – you know, where can you go?
Well, we're in the process. I mean, we feel there has to be help out there somewhere, and especially with the situation here where we have such a high concentration of sand mines, and the health and safety of these residents are what we are most concerned about right now. Yes, there's concerns with water. There's concerns with, you know, taking our farmland. But at this point in time, our health is of the utmost concern. So we are moving diligently forward with this.
With what, a complaint?
Yeah, complaint. We're going to file a nuisance. I mean, whatever we have to do. And again, they are telling me they cannot file a formal violation against them because of the prevailing winds. And I don't even know. We haven't even had an inspector out here. I mean, it's still pretty windy today, but
that's absurd. That's absurd. There's no logic in there. The logic just goes in a big circle. Say, we approve this, and the winds, we know the winds are very strong there, and they're going to blow the sand around, and that's the reason you can't file a complaint.
Well, they're saying because when you have prevailing winds of 20 miles per hour or greater, there's no way to contain the sand. So since there's no way to contain the sand, we just won't enforce that rule. That's basically what he told me.
So wow.
I think it's different when this sand is in a pit. You know, there's other sand mines. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of four of them out here in our where we live. But most of the sand mines are in the pit, so their stockpiles are down below, you know, ground level. Not so with Northern White Sand, who continues to, and I don't know if you've seen recent pictures, but there's probably a dozen mountains of sand that, I don't know, what are they, 200 to 300 feet or higher out there. It looks like mountains. And they're continuing to just add to those, and they don't seem to be moving much off site. So, you know, the winds are taking that and blowing it all through, you know, our homes, basically, in our neighborhood.
We're talking to Diane Gassman from LaSalle County. I've read some of the reports in the local paper, and thank goodness that it's being covered locally there. But the folks in places like Utica, your officials there, they think they can still have tourist traffic.
In, oh, I know.
They think that the tourists are going to come. You know what they should do at the city limits is hand out gas masks. That would be a good place to start. I've been there. I took a tour with you, watched the trucks rumble past. It's hard to get out into traffic. You know, I saw this thing they did on WYCC, Channel 20, the other week. It was a conversation about all of this, and they had a reporter who was supposed to be, I think, neutral. Then they had an industry guy who, of course, was for industry. And then they had your state senator who was more or less for industry, and no environmentalists there. And they showed pictures of trucks. They showed video of trucks rumbling down the highway one at a time. You know, they didn't sit at the intersection and watch truck after truck after truck rumble by, which is happening now in Utica. They didn't sit at the train track and watch the backup that happens now every day and sometimes several times a day, which I was part of when sitting with you. I don't know how they get away with this. Maybe you ought to take some of that sand to City Hall and put it on their doorstep.
We're hoping that some of this now is really starting to, you know, sink in, because really they did not investigate this at all before this was approved. I mean, it really is obvious to us. They were clueless as to what they were accepting and, you know, approving here. So we're now in the midst of these four sand mines out here, and this is what we're to deal with. So, you know, hopefully we do have still some legal recourse, which we plan to pursue, but it's, you know, costly.
And you still, folks, if you're listening, if you're a lawyer, if you think you can help out, give me a call, excuse me, and I will pass your information along to Diane. They could use some help here. You know, when you get the IEPA that says, well, sand's piling up, there's really nothing we can do about it. I see that our friend Ashley Williams was told to sit down and be quiet at a recent Utica Planning Commission meeting. That's not good either.
No, it's not good. And I think Ashley was really asking some good questions about air monitoring. And I think, you know, the air monitoring is a huge issue, but, you know, you can twist statistics to say whatever you want them to say, and we were basically asking for the information so we could view it ourselves, and we're denied that. So, you know, I just think the whole situation is out of control, and we need to get it back under control.
And we're going to lose tourism bucks down there. It's quite, I mean, if these winds start whipping this stuff is going to end up in Starved Rock State Park. You know, what happens when your people are on the deck trying to enjoy the view and it's covered in sand? That's going to be really...
Yeah, and the wildlife. I mean, it's not only impacting us, but it impacts the wildlife. And
absolutely.
I think there are quite a few studies being done right now on what the impacts of silica sand are on the wildlife. So, you know, it has a domino effect, and you and I both know that we're seeing it now, and it's not going to get better with the expansion of these sand mines.
Well, Diane Gassman, keep me apprised. Thank you so much for being on the show. Go to my website, mikenovak.net. Look at this week's show, and you'll see some of the photos. I'm going to get some more and post them on Facebook, but I got to let you go.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. Wow. Just insane. Okay. Well, we got to stay positive. It's the end of the show. Carol, hello. And I say, go green or
go home.
That's as positive as I can get.